You're listening to the first edition of the 2018 Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Our focus today is Senate District 8, which covers all of Bladen, Brunswick, and Pender counties. It includes two precincts in New Hanover County, 2.6% of the county, which also happens to be mostly Democratic and African American. Bill Rabin, a Republican from Brunswick County, is finishing out his fourth term and seeking a fifth. He declined the invitation to appear with a note from a legislative assistant saying his schedule is full. Joining me now is David Sink Jr., the Democratic candidate challenging the incumbent. You can ask him your own question on this Thursday by calling us at 910-343-1138 or emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. David Sink says he's a native of Lexington, North Carolina, and served 31 years in the North Carolina Community College System as president of two colleges, Roanoke Chowan, you'll correct me on that pronunciation, for 5 years, and Blue Ridge for 20 years. David Sink faced no primary challenger. David Sink, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you, Rachel. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure to have you here. And please do correct my pronunciation on those two colleges, Roanoke.
Chowan.
Chowan. Thank you. What brought you from a different part of the state to the coast?
I've lived in the Piedmont for 20 years. I lived in the mountains for 25 years. But during all those years, I was always coming to Brunswick County. We had the family had a house down at Holden Beach. And I have so many friends here, know so much about the area. And I still have family here in Brunswick County. My nephew has decided to come back here. He's a plastic surgeon. My daughter and her late husband had a medical practice here. So I've always felt like Brunswick County was just a part of me, and I considered it one of my homes. Having a failed retirement in the mountains, I came down here and bought a business, and now my son is running the business, and he told me to get out and do something useful. So next thing you know, I'm winding up running for a political office.
And this is your first run at political office?
Well, yes and no. We have to qualify that, Rachel. In 1958, I was president of Grimes Elementary School in the sixth grade. I beat Elizabeth G. 49-1 in the vote.
President of the sixth grade or the entire school?
The entire school.
Student body.
Yeah,
okay.
It was grades 1 through 6. And so I think I'm, at that time, I felt like I could conquer the world.
And, you know, in a sense, you're trying to do that now, running in what is a largely Republican district as a Democratic candidate. How do you expect to gain any traction when you are in the minority?
I hope, and I feel strongly about this, that all of us need to look beyond the partisan approach to things, and let's discuss the issues. You're accurate in that Brunswick is predominantly Republican, if you look at registrations. But we're also representing the people of Bladen County and the people of Pender County, and as you mentioned, 2.6% of the voters in the Wilmington area. And the significant number of the people in these counties, even in Brunswick County, don't have a voice. And I think that's why I'm stepping up to the plate. I want very much to represent the people that to some degree, I've even lost hope, but feel like that what they're saying, the issues to them that are important to them, are not being recognized in Raleigh. And so we can go through a litany of issues.
What are some of those issues that if these people, if you were to hand the microphone over to them, what would they say?
Well, the first thing they're telling me as I travel these three counties is that we need to do something about the job situation for our young people. And so the solution to that is we look at 21st century vocational education for our high schools. We reintroduce the importance of applied technology in our community colleges. And then we encourage our community colleges to reach out to local industry and ask them, what do you need to see from us in terms of a trained workforce? I have a career at three different community colleges, helping with job development, recruiting new industry into the area. And I know firsthand, without a trained workforce and without an enhanced quality of life and good school systems, we're going to have an uphill battle trying to create new jobs and attract new jobs to the area. That's the number one thing I hear in the counties in Bladen and Pender. The next issue would be the clean water issue. I mean, give me a break. 40 years dumping poison into our drinking water resource, and yet the can continues to be kicked down the road in terms of doing something about it. Rachel, I have a folder that is probably 4 or 5 inches thick of just editorials from local newspapers about the history of Gen X.
There is new cooperation, though, between the DEQ, the state regulatory agency, and the federal EPA. And the EPA is talking about coming out with a regulation, a limit for compounds like Gen X. Is that enough?
No.
What needs to happen?
Well, Rachel, it's still poison. And if we look at what the leadership in the General Assembly has done, they've actually taken money away from the Department of Environmental Quality in Raleigh, and they put $5 million into a group of universities to do another study, and that's going to be 12 to 18 months down the road. But at the same time, to your point, that there might be a raising of the acceptance level of Gen X in our drinking water, it still doesn't address the issues of over 150 wells in Bladen and Pender County have been infested with Gen X. Beyond the acceptable level, another 300-plus wells have a marginal acceptance level.
So what should the state legislature be doing about that?
Well, we need to give not only the resources but the teeth into the Department of Environmental Quality to hold the polluters accountable for that, because it's worse than the water. It's airborne now. So it's on the leafy vegetables in Bladen and Pender counties. So the first thing we need to do is to quit saying we need to do another study and come in and say, here are the facts, clean it up now, or we're going to shut you down. And then, of course, then there's the argument of, well, what about the dislocated workers? Well, we have programs that addresses people who have lost their job because the company was in violation of environmental rules.
You're listening to the 2018 Coastline Candidate Interviews. Right now, we're meeting David Sink Jr., Democratic candidate for Senate District 8. You can ask your own question on this Thursday by calling us at 910-343-1138 or sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. Andy writes, hoping to hear from David Sink on his view of public education, K through 12, and universities, how to make North Carolina's public schools better.
I'm a product of the North Carolina public school system and the university system. And I go back to the days when Luther Hodges was governor, then the years of Terry Sanford and Jim Hunt, Bev Perdue, Bob Scott. We were known as a progressive state where people said we're from North Carolina with pride because of our public school system ranking and our university system second to none. Because of the budget cutbacks and taking money away from our public schools and reallocating monies to private schools and to charter schools, to the point now that Our talented people do not want to go into education. We have to reverse that. We have to create a situation where if you want to be a teacher, North Carolina is the place to be. I mean, we have.
How do you create that situation?
Well, we do it with a significant number of things. First, we provide the resources that teachers need so they can teach, and we give them teachers' aides. We have school nurses. We have school psychologists. We have principals who are trained to understand that teachers need to teach and not be secretaries or administrative assistants on the side. And we need to make our schools safe. So we provide the resource officers that are trained to deal with those situations so that our teachers can teach. And we start at the university level in our teacher programs to instill in these young people that This is the greatest profession in the world that has immediate impact on our young people. When I traveled on economic development, representing three community colleges throughout the state, recruiting industry from Japan, Finland, even as far England, even far away as Chicago, and people had a great admiration for our group because we were college administrators. And the point is that education was held in high esteem in those countries that I just mentioned. Yet now, that's not the case, especially in North Carolina when you look at teacher salaries and principal salaries. You know, we rank number 50 out of 50 for our high school principals.
So you talked about providing resources in the form of additional staff people to teachers, in
yes.
the form of materials to teachers.
Yes.
When we look at salaries, the legislature passed the 6% teacher salary increase. Governor Cooper had proposed an 8% increase. Some teachers say even though salaries have increased, they haven't accounted for inflation. How do you think increases for teachers should happen?
Well, good question. And the teachers are right because, yes, 6% sounds like a hefty increase, but when at the same time teachers have lost longevity pay, they have lost the incentive extra pay to go for a master's degree or a graduate degree, yet they're—
Would you bring that back,
absolutely,
master's pay?
In a heartbeat. And I'm going to tell you how we can pay for that, too, without any tax increase. And the other thing is that the teachers are paying a higher premium for their health insurance. So, Rachel, here's one of the driving forces as to why I'm getting into politics, and it's our educational lottery. The money is there to be spent on education and not to be spent in other functions of the state. North Carolina Constitution requires a balanced budget, but yet we've been taking money out of the educational lottery to fund other activities. When the educational lottery was passed by the voters in North Carolina, all of us who were community college presidents and university chancellors and public school superintendents traveled the state statewide and sold the concept to the people that all the monies in an educational lottery would go to public schools. Well, that's not the case. I challenge you. I challenge anybody listening to my concern. Call your legislator and ask them what percentage of the educational lottery money actually goes to public schools, and I will buy you dinner if you get a straight answer.
There you go. The offer is laid out there. You're listening to the 2018 Coastline Candidate Interviews. We're talking with David Sink Jr., the Democratic candidate for Senate District 8. You can ask your own question during the live discussion on this Thursday by calling us at 910-343-1138 or emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. David Sink, you mentioned school safety. Do you think teachers should be armed if they would like to be?
Well, teachers should be armed with resources, the teaching materials that they need, and some of which I mentioned were on the personnel side of things. But in terms of if weapons are going to provide school safety, then we need to have trained resource officers. I own a gun. I'm not opposed to Second Amendment rights. And I think a lot of people fear that certain elected officials can't wait to get in and eliminate gun ownership. That's not the case. Teachers should be armed with what they need to do their profession and let other personnel take care of the safety issues. And there's an abundance of ways to do that, from architectural designs to redesigning existing buildings to make people more aware, especially with counseling in the early grades so that we can identify later on. And there's nothing wrong with more extensive background checks, too. That's not going to take away anybody's Second Amendment right. Good gracious, give me a break.
Let's talk about a couple of the constitutional amendments that will show up on the ballot this November. There will be six of them, constitutional amendments. And of course, those of us who've been interested in the issue have been watching the legal wrangling over how these are presented on the ballot. And there has been challenges to the way they've been written because some people, Democrats largely, call those questions misleading, not including all the information that voters need to make a good choice. Elon University just put out results of a poll showing that the two amendments, one requiring a photo ID to vote, the other changing the state income tax rate, they found that voters were less supportive of the two measures after they'd read the more detailed explanation of the amendments, which they will not get on the ballot this November. What do you think about the photo ID ballot question? Would you support or oppose that?
I think that that is one of the several efforts to suppress voter rights and to eliminate certain people, classes of people. If we had a very fair and easy process of having an ID, then that needs to be clarified. But not everybody has a driver's license. Not everybody has a passport. Not everybody has a library card or a utility bill to show that this is where they live. And related to this, Rachel, I don't think that there are any cases, certainly not to any significance, of voter fraud where people have stepped up and said they were somebody else or they voted more than once. You know, show me the data. It just doesn't exist that is a major issue in North Carolina elections. So I would tread lightly in terms of trying to support any valid ID to require one to have the right to vote. And I think these other constitutional amendments, they're just not needed. Look at what the intent behind them. It's to strip Governor Cooper of his ability to appoint people to positions. Even, what is it, five governors came out together, two Republicans, three Democrats opposing these constitutional amendments. And what in the world were the legislators thinking when they said they put on a constitutional amendment that you have the right to hunt and fish? I mean, that's a scare tactic. That's just to try to get a certain base of folks to come to the polls, and that's not needed.
A panel of federal judges recently determined that North Carolina's congressional maps are unconstitutional partisan gerrymanders, although the ruling came too late to do anything about it this election year. Both sides agreed to that, including the judges. The Atlantic asks this question. Just what does it mean that multiple legislative delegations have been elected in a state found repeatedly to have used unconstitutional means to decide who is represented and how? Aside from redrawing those maps with the upcoming census, the next round of redistricting, what kind of process would you, David Sink, endorse to create fair districts? And of course, you're in the minority now, so it's very easy to say, yes, bad majority party, but we know historically Democrats have done this too.
Well, that was one of the points I was going to make is that history shows that the Democrats were wrong for about 100 years, and the Republicans hollered foul. Then the Republicans redistricted and gained power in Raleigh, and now the Democrats are hollering foul. And I have two thoughts on this, Rachel. One, if we can break the supermajority, or if we can at least have an equalitarian approach to the House and the Senate, we must reach across the aisle and have an understanding that gerrymandering is wrong, and let's have independent study redraw the district lines. I used to think that that could be a bipartisan group. I don't believe that's the case now. I think it has to be totally independent to redraw those lines. Until that happens, I think that something that I will bring to Raleigh is civility. I think we have to reach across the aisle. Some of my best friends from the mountains are in the North Carolina General Assembly, and they're Republicans. But they are good people. But we got to get out of this.
They're Republicans, but they're good people.
Yeah, I know. That's a medium oxymoron, but they are. And if I give you an example, a fellow in the House from Hendersonville, North Carolina, was the national president of the Sierra Club. Now, come on. Where's the connect there? See? He's a good person. And so I think that to reemphasize the point is that until we can redraw the districts, we have got to get beyond voting on straight policy party issues.
Do you do that? How do you open up the conversation so that people are willing to negotiate? Because right now you're labeled as perhaps soft or not committed enough to your party's position if you're willing to negotiate with the other side. There's a real downside.
Yes, and it's getting back to listening to the people. You see, in a democracy, representatives are elected, and then when they get to Raleigh, all of a sudden they don't listen to the people anymore. They say, they being the power, well, we know what's best for the people back home. They don't know what they really need. Therefore, we're looking at party lines, and party lines are saying that leadership, the current leadership, well, you know, there's a lot of jobs being created, so let's just delay this this situation with DuPont or Kenmore dumping poisons into the water. Or, you know, we're getting a lot of support from big oil, so let's go ahead and support offshore drilling. When the people are saying, no, wait a minute, we don't want this. We live on the coast. We don't want offshore drilling. What a novel idea that our children and grandchildren don't have to worry about drinking water that's tainted. And so my point is, let's listen to the people instead of the oligarchs that we now have in Raleigh who are in power and saying, just as Socrates did, well, we know what the people need. They don't know what they need. And that has to change. And we do. To answer your question, instead of rambling, the answer to your question is we have to bring the leadership in the General Assembly to look at what the people are saying and what the people want.
So I gather you do not support offshore exploration or drilling for oil and gas.
Well, I thought I made that fairly clear. Yes,
okay.
You are exactly right.
Just checking. Eric from Wilmington says, on the regulations on Chemours, are you for rising regulatory fines? What would this look like? He says, I think companies now think these are part of business, paying these fines.
Fines are one way to address the situation of holding the polluters responsible for what they've done. But what I'd rather see is they quit dumping the stuff in the water. So, and we also do what we have to do regarding the release through the air, the putting filters on the smokestacks or whatever it takes. But there are studies at major universities that have identified ways to eliminate this particular poison, and so let's implement those. And if I don't know that fines is going to do it to answer the caller's question, but what should be guiding our thinking is, what do we do to stop the poison being dumped into the water immediately and quit coming up with studies that say, okay, we can raise the acceptance level because it's not that harmful. It's only creating problems in laboratory mice, but not in humans.
What would you do briefly with the Confederate monuments on state Capitol grounds?
Well, I'm a
10 seconds.
I'm a graduate of Chapel Hill, and Silent Sam was there when I was there, and he was there when my father was there, and my daughter was there. We need to relocate that statue and put it at a different location in Chapel Hill.
And that's this edition of Coastline. David Sink, thanks so much for being
Thank
with
you,
us.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thanks also to Anthony Mascolo, Libertarian candidate for Senate District 8. Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Producer is Rachel Keith. Production manager is Caitlin Hanrahan. Caitlin Freund is our webmaster. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at WHQR.org. Get the podcast, find it on the HQR app, or just tune in for the rebroadcast Sunday afternoon at 2. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.